Our last agenda item is item P. It's our Task Force on Self-Represented Litigants. It's a final report on implementation of the Judicial Council Statewide Action Plan for Serving Self-Represented Litigants. This is an action item, and we welcome to the presenter's table Presiding Justice Kathleen O'Leary, Chair, Implementation Task Force on Self-Represented Litigants, Ms. Bonnie Huff, Judicial Council Center for Families, Children, and the Courts, and Ms. Deborah Chase, Judicial Council Center for Families, Children, and the Courts. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm pleased to be presenting the final report on the task force. I think you will see that a great deal has been accomplished since we began our mission. Actually, much more has been accomplished than I ever anticipated could be accomplished. I was a little bit of a skeptic, but I think the task force outdid itself. The key findings from the initial task force on how would we deal with the increasing number of self-represented litigants in our courts were pretty simple. We found that self-help centers in each of the courts was the best way for courts to address the issues effectively and efficiently and in a cost-effective way. We found that it would be imperative for courts to have well-designed strategies, so not going on an ad hoc basis, but proceeding with a well-defined strategy to manage cases involving self-represented litigants. And we found that it was critical for the courts to have partnerships in their communities so that we could effectively address the increasing number of self-represented litigants. Many times when we embark on dealing with court problems, we find that there is a real tension between different interests. Interestingly enough, when it came to self-represented litigants, there was a unity of interests. The courts obviously needed to resolve cases involving self-represented litigants efficiently and fairly and in a timely way. But the public also wanted to see that these disputes with self-represented litigants would be resolved quickly and that they would be done so in a fair manner. So really, by providing assistance to self-represented litigants, we served everyone's best interest. And when their cases went through court quickly and efficiently, it meant less disruption at the workplace, less need for child care for people with small children. It was less disruptive of people's lives, and we were able to handle those cases efficiently. The first specific recommendation we made was with respect to self-help centers and indicating that they were the best way to provide support to self-represented litigants. They are now available in all California courts in varying sizes and shapes. Over 1.2 million Californians are served each year in self-help centers. I think you'll see that the rich diversity of California is well represented in our self-help centers. The majority of people that are served in self-help centers are people of color, but there is a significant one-third of the population is a white population. Interesting that 75% of the people we serve in self-help centers do have some income. So we're serving not just poor people, but the working poor. 81% of those who come to court have very meager earnings, but they do have some earnings. This next slide is just a quick look at what a self-help center looks like, and this is a workshop. And this is how I think limited resources are leveraged, where you have a workshop where you have several self-represented litigants that come in, and staff walks them through forms and procedures in the specific case type that they're coming to court for. The other recommendation, second recommendation we made was there needed to be some statewide support, that there needed to be local programs in all 58 counties, but there had to be some kind of statewide support because that was more efficient, a way to effectively share best practices so we weren't all reinventing the wheel. That has been done through training, listservs, and a bank of resources developed at CFCC by Judicial Council staff so that the courts, local courts, have a place to go. The listserv conversations are very interesting. I'm on the listservs, and there are interesting questions about how to serve a parent who is on active duty in Afghanistan. Does anyone have a form in, translated a form into Thai that we could use? So, I mean, there's a lot of discussion and a lot of chatter on that listserv that I think really assists the courts. There's also a self-help website that is maintained by Judicial Council staff that any litigant in the state can go to for a variety of subjects, and we have different languages and different case types. The Hot Docs program, That's sort of a prompt service on a computer, so when someone is trying to fill out a document to be filed in court, it prompts them as to what information they need. More services for representation sometimes are needed. Self-represented litigants can't always handle the case themselves, and so there's a pro bono toolkit that has just been updated and posted on the website that allows courts throughout the state, if judges are going to speak to bar groups and they want to encourage pro bono work, this gives them some ideas on how to encourage that kind of work. Also, rules have been changed to allow for limited scope representation. That was an area where sometimes it was very hard to get lawyers involved because they felt once their fingerprints were on that family law file, they could never get them off. And so now there are procedures where they can enter into limited scope contracts with clients and they see an end of what their services are. Also, the Shriver pilot projects have assisted, administered through judicial counsel staff, have assisted courts as well as the equal access grants. Knowing how scarce resources were, the task force knew that the allocation of resources was critical. There isn't an unlimited funding, as you all know, for the courts. And so we wanted to see that services for self-help litigants was incorporated into core funding for the courts. Rule 10.960 was adopted and indicated that self-help services is a core function that courts should be providing. Also within the rules are the guidelines for self-help centers so that we have some consistency in terms of access to justice throughout our state, regardless of what county you're receiving your services in. We also recommended that judicial branch education be given. And when many of us went to law school, self-represented litigants were really a minority. The typical client was a client represented by a lawyer. That has changed significantly in many areas of our courts, in consumer debt, housing and family law courts. So we felt that additional training and education would be helpful for judges and for staff. So there is an extensive curriculum now and there's online study. There's also a specialized bench guide to assist justices in dealing with the self-represented litigant population. And the idea that we do have a number of self-represented litigants coming into our courts is incorporated at the earliest stage at the new judge orientation. And, of course, staff is receiving training as well. They're no longer dealing with just attorneys and attorney services. They're dealing with a lot of self-represented litigants. There was also a recommendation with respect to sharing our information with our sister branches of government and actually with the federal government as well. And so courts do provide information regarding services. Sometimes it's a county board of supervisor member that gets the call who says, you know, my niece can't get child support and she doesn't know how to go about doing it. And so by sharing what we're doing with our local authorities, they're able to, there's a self-help center in the county and here's where it's located. So I think that was an important outreach by local courts. There's also statewide referrals and information available for self-represented litigants. And we have reported on a regular basis on various aspects of our progress with self-represented litigants to the legislature so that they know that the money that they are allocating for these services and that the judicial, that they're funding and the judicial council is allocating for these services, those dollars are being well spent and that we're actually accomplishing something with those funds. Facilities. We knew that self-help centers would be constricted by facilities or they could be supported by facilities. And so at an early point in our task force, we worked with facility staff here at the Judicial Council and talked about where how facilities could either facilitate it or serve as a barrier. And we found that they were very receptive to the idea that now if courthouses are being remodeled or a new courthouse is being constructed, facilities for the self-help center and a place workspace for the self-represented litigants to work is being incorporated into the design. Our research showed at an early point that locating a self-help center in the courthouse was much more effective than renting or leasing space outside. By the time they got back to file their papers in court at the clerk's office, there were more problems. That has been, the actual self-help center has been most effective in the courthouse. But that also doesn't rule out outreach locations because sometimes, depending on the specific characteristics of a county, there's sometimes communities are somewhat isolated from the courthouse. And so by doing clinics or reaching out to those isolated areas, more self-represented litigants can be helped. That's particularly true in some rural counties where, in addition to actual physical outreach, they're doing outreach through Skype or video conferencing so that they'll actually do a clinic electronically so that people can interact and ask questions. We also knew that there would be a fiscal impact, that we could design a program and we could design effective practices, but every program needs money. In 1997, no state funds were being spent on self-help centers in local courts. Now, some local courts were being very innovative in taking some of their operating budget and starting very modest programs to support self-represented litigants, but there was really no recognition at the state level that funding was needed for these services. Currently, $11.2 million is being spent to support self-help services. If we have sort of our own mini blueprint in terms of what we think would be needed to fund optimum support for self-represented litigants, and that would be $44 million. Now, the $11 million that comes from general fund dollars is augmented by justice court grants and other grants. So courts have been very resourceful. Judicial counsel staff has been very resourceful in finding ways to find more money to support these services. And they always say you need to spend money to make money, and I'm always a little skeptical of that. But studies have shown that courts save $4.35 for every dollar that's spent on a workshop for self-represented litigants. And the reason that happens is cases are not continued as many times because litigants understand the process better. So it certainly saves a lot of time on the court staff side of the equation. And when litigants go into court, they're prepared. They have the documents. They have the information. So judges are not spending a lot of very precious and valuable court time trying to explain a process to a self-represented litigant because they've already learned that in the self-help center. So that's kind of what we've been able to do in the last several years. And the work, our recommendation is that the ongoing work to support self-represented litigants become part of the work plan for the new Providing Access and Fairness Committee. The action plan will need to be continue to be implemented. There are certain tweaks that need to be made. It needs to be expanded or modified based on needs and new technology. More resources need to be developed. We want to continue to advocate for full funding, that full $44 million that would provide greater access for self-represented litigants throughout the state. We also, at one point, sat around the room and looked and said, gee, we've done a great job of getting the litigants into the courthouse by allowing them to fill out forms and understand the process. Perhaps we need to focus more on getting them out of the courthouse. They get in the process, and our support has been sort of front-ended. So we really would like to see settlement programs for self-represented litigants. Well-funded family law litigants many times avoid the crunch in a courthouse by going to a settlement officer who they pay, who drafts their agreement for them, and then they bring it into court, and the court accepts it. Some modest form of that for self-represented litigants might save courts a lot of time because it may be that we don't have as many contested matters as we need to have, as we are having now, because no one sits down with the self-represented litigants in an effort to settle cases. Also, sometimes there's problems with actually executing orders or complying with orders because, again, a self-represented litigant doesn't have a lot of support on the back end of the case. They've gotten their order, they've gotten their judgment, but they haven't gotten any advice on how to make the best use of those orders or comply with those orders. Also, as our processes within the court are modernized, we need to modernize the business processes that affect self-represented litigants so that they have the same kind of access as others. We also want to promote effective case management and technology systems. There's a lot of technology. A lot of self-represented litigants actually have cell phones and smartphones that can help them navigate the process. Things like sending them a text message to say, hey, your case is on calendar tomorrow. Forms will change. We'll need to update the Hot Docs programs. And as technology changes, self-help centers will need to update their technology. And, you know, as the challenges facing us change and the population that we serve changes, we'll need to have continuing education of judges and staff so that they're prepared to deal with self-represented litigants. There are also, according to the rules, there are guidelines for the operation of self-help centers, and those need to occasionally be reviewed and updated as necessary. Also, the task force for the Elkins final report recommended that a number of efforts be transferred to an ongoing Judicial Council Advisory Committee, so that work doesn't end, but that work actually is implemented. And it envisions, the recommendations in that report envision many of the things that the task force was already focused on, but it also focused on increasing the availability of interpreters in self-help centers. We have a lot of bilingual employees in self-help centers, but not so many interpreters. And then I think there has to be ongoing support of trial courts as they deal with self-represented litigants as the number increases. So I think that the work of the task force is a good example of how the judicial branch can be innovative, how we can reinvent ourselves when we're challenged by a new phenomena, which is really the increase of self-represented litigants was a new phenomena. And we didn't just sort of shut down our courthouses and bury our heads. We said, how do we deal effectively with these people consistent with our charge? And I think the task force has done a pretty good job on thinking of new strategies to deal with new problems.
Thank you, Justice O'Leary. I will say that in the short time you've been able to present, even if you had the day to present, you could not begin to chronicle all the great work and great strides that this task force has accomplished. And it's true, back in 2001, as you just referenced, instead of ignoring it or instead of thinking it would go away, the Judicial Council, under your leadership, tackled this and really has given us 13 years of data, information, and developing responses for the courts in order to assist people who don't have attorneys. We know that population has grown. And as you briefly mentioned in your report here, how great that assistance of self-help and to self-represented litigants assists the bench officer in being able to most wisely use the precious amount of time that exists for these cases that are, in many situations, self-represented litigants in volume courts. So your leadership is to be highly commended since 2001, and you're following it through 2004, then taking on the task of chairing the smaller task force, and also your participation in the Providing Access and Fairness Committee to the Judicial Council to keep this alive. It's educated us throughout a decade plus on a population that has grown, that we've been able to provide services, and it sounds like it's growing, as you indicated, because self-represented litigants are no longer the low-income level that we thought in 2000. It is, in fact, moderate income. It's business folks, people who cannot pay the services of an attorney. So thank you for your work. Thank you, Bonnie, for your dedication to this issue. Thank you for your folks who put this together for us. It's really now an integral part of the judiciary. And so thank you very much. I know we have before us some recommendations that include items 1 and 2, as well as some subdivisions on page 2 and continuing to page 3. And I invite counsel to review those, and I open the floor for any comments or observations. Justice Miller.
I just wanted to personally thank you for all you've done with regards to this task force over the last many years, and then also for what you are now taking on with the Providing Access and Fairness.
I will pass your compliments on to the task force members, because I have to tell you, this task force has been a working task force. It was not staff-driven. We got great support from staff, but I'll tell you, a lot of the drafting, a lot of the writing, a lot of the research was done by task force members because they're so passionate about these issues.
Well, and again, I appreciate all the work that you and the staff and the committee members did, but I also am so grateful that it's continuing, because it needs to continue and it has a place. And I'm so glad you're there to herald it through. So thank you. And then I wanted to say, you must have been a court reporter's nightmare.
No, my court reporter had me on a short leash, but, you know.
And I move to adopt the recommendation.
Second.
Second by Judge Rosenberg. Any further discussion? All in favor of the recommendations, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, thank you, thank you.
and future thank yous for your leadership on PAF.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank See, you. Justice Miller, you can be effective and quick at the same time.
Did that get a second?
This is a tough one.
Yeah, it is.